This is ESPN Radio.
It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and streaming on ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And we got a lot to get to today. We're at the halfway mark. It's halftime of the week. We got football coming on again tomorrow, and we got NFC East football, which means we got to ask some questions about this division coming off week one, because there are, feels like there are some serious things at stake already heading into week two. But Chris, we're also going to have just this cloud hanging over our heads this entire show, because Rolling Stone decided to drop this list of the top 500 songs of all time, and we have somehow allowed it to trigger everyone in the studio here.
Yeah, the show prep just went completely off the rails just because we were so fascinated by the list and some of the misses that Rolling Stones had in there. Now, I get it. It's 500 songs. It's a really broad audience, so it makes it hard to kind of pick apart this list, but nonetheless, we're going to give our best effort and tell them where they made the mistakes, where they messed up, because I feel like a lot of these things in here need to be addressed.
Oh, what was the song that had you really shaking your head? You was in here screaming before the show, going crazy. Like,
all right,
you said, oh my goodness. Like, Cliff, what was it? What happened?
Cliff, I had to do it. They had Kanye's Runaway at 25th on the list, and I'm sorry, that song is not even the best on that album. Like, I just, there are so many different things within this that we got to address. Yeah, I mean, you're playing that song, and quite frankly, when I listen to the album, I run away from listening to that track.
Man.
So, I mean, I just, that's how I feel about it. But we'll have plenty of time to get into that. I don't want to take the show off the rails like our show prep guy. We still got some stuff we got to get into. And first and foremost, we got to talk about my Giants, Mike.
Exactly. So we will sprinkle in little bits of this terror as we go along during the show. But in the meantime, Chris just mentioned it. Let's start with New York, because we're going to see them back in action tomorrow night. And Chris, we have already heard from their star running back, Saquon Barkley, who said this quick turnaround coming off an injury this offseason is not ideal for him. But heading into this matchup, we always used to do must win, just win around here for a while on the show. You coined a phrase that I feel like should be introduced into the zeitgeist from now on. You called this not a must win, but a can't lose for the Giants.
Yeah, it's starting to feel that way, right, Mike? I mean, the Giants have had four consecutive double-digit loss seasons, and in an offseason where Dave Gettleman invests almost $100 million on the offensive side of the ball, trying to get Daniel Jones some weapons, drafting Kadarius Toney in the first round, you would think that that offense would make huge strides, but it didn't look like that on Sunday against the Denver Broncos. And I get it. The Broncos are a legitimate defense. Like, they're going to make some noise this season. But to be held to 170 yards of total offense through three quarters, that's unacceptable. So at some point, the Giants are going to have to get this thing figured out. And Saquon Barkley is going to have to be a big piece of it. Now, I get what he's saying about how it's not ideal having a short turnaround early in the season coming off of a major injury. But you know what else is not ideal? Him having 26 yards on 11 touches. Like, that can't happen. Saquon has to be better. He has to be more of an impact player. He has to produce in order for this offense to go. That's why they drafted him with the second overall pick back in 2018. So I'm sure the Giants are hoping to get more return on investment from investing that kind of capital in this type of player, because since the Giants drafted Saquon, the team is 15-34. So Saquon Barkley, I don't want to hear about this not being ideal. Right now, you need to go down there and find a way to be able to get a win on the road against a divisional opponent, because starting 0-2, knowing the history with this team under Daniel Jones, that's less than ideal.
So this was Saquon Barkley, the Giants star running back, after practice on Tuesday, talking about when will you know you're ready?
Thursday, when I'm out there. You know, I feel like the warming up and all that stuff will definitely indicate it, because in here you can't really – you're not really running full speed, just with the nature of the short week. So, you know, just keep the communication with the doctors and the trainers and listen to them. But definitely when I'm able to start moving around a little bit more, see how my body feels and see how my body reacts.
Chris, hearing that coupled with that idea of, hey, this is less than ideal, tells me one thing. And I always hear Stefania Bell, one of our great ESPN injury analysts around here, and a number of others always say this up. Any athlete who's ever been hurt, the last hurdle's always mental. And this tells me he's thinking about it way more than the Giants can be comfortable with, knowing, all right, if we were going to go out and think about using him with the kind of volume we would normally see for Saquon Barkley, those quotes would make me think twice, because while he hasn't come out and said, hey, I'm not going to play, I got to shut this down, he's going to go with what the medical people say. He didn't want to make excuses. It just lets me know he's thinking about it enough where he's going to be a lot less effective. Saquon Barkley's running style is one that requires him to go out there, play free, play loose, and really draw stuff up in the dirt. It's what he's been doing because he didn't have much of a line at Penn State, and he doesn't have much of a line here now. And so that mental hurdle seems to be, in my mind, the biggest limiting factor for him right now.
Yeah, MGJ, my mind went there when I heard that comment as well. And you always know this, like, a guy has got to get out there, and they've got to take those hits, and they've got to realize that they can do some of the same things now on the other side of this injury as they could before. And I think there's a little bit of that curve when it comes to Saquon fully trusting his knee and fully having confidence in his abilities. But also, I listened to some of the things that he said, and in talking about the touches and talking about the reps that he got when he was in the game, he played in, what, 29 snaps of the 61 that the Giants had on offense. And he said that there were some that he almost had a chance of breaking. He came that close to being able to hit the home run. One of the criticisms of Saquon Barkley, even before the injury, was this is a guy that doesn't necessarily recognize the value in a four-yard run. He's always looking to hit the home run. Sometimes just picking up 4 yards and making it second and six or third and two is the win for the offense. That keeps everybody on schedule. And best of all, that prevents Daniel Jones from being in those third and long situations where he's already shown the tendency to be able to turn the football over. So I think that Saquon might have to adjust a little bit in terms of playing a different role in order to help this Giants offense go, because we recognize he's the ultimate satellite back. You can put him anywhere. He can catch passes, and he's a threat to take it to the house from anywhere on the field. But sometimes the offense needs you to be able to provide that stability, being able to help them stay ahead of the chains. And I don't think that Saquon Barkley in that running game has done enough of that for Big Blue.
No, and I think it was interesting in game one, they were clearly aware of that, right? We saw a lot more of Devontae Booker, their backup running back, early and often over the course of that game. They used Saquon a lot more as a receiver. They'd split him out. They'd motion him back in. They'd try and get him on the edges of this. They seemed very keenly aware. And I don't know, Chris, it's easy to circle Saquon because he's a big factor for this offense. But when I went back and watched that game a second time, we focused in on so many things, right? Saquon coming back from injury, how he's going to be. The answer was, you know, all right, largely ineffective, but not a ton of touches. He was only out there for, I think, half the snaps on offense. Yep. You look at the offensive line, they were bad, but it wasn't the worst I had ever seen from them. Daniel Jones gave up the ball at an inopportune time and wasn't always accurate, but there were drops. Everyone on that offense contributed to that unit being less than it could have been, and I think that's got to be the most frustrating part, is there's not one antidote for what's going on with this Giants offense. It didn't look in sync, and it ends up costing your defense. You know this. It gets hard jogging to the sideline after some of these failed drives when your defense is selling out the way the Giants looked like they were yesterday or this weekend.
No question about it, but the Giants defense has some fault in this as well. I mean, it wasn't all on the offense. I mean, when you start breaking down the time of possession, I mean, we're well in the third quarter, and you're talking about the Broncos doubling up on the Giants 2-for-1 with time of possession. So that defense needed to find more ways to be able to get off the field. They did get that turnover in the red zone late in the first half, but it was too sporadic in terms of being able to create stops and force negative plays on Teddy Bridgewater and that Denver Broncos offense. And so that's kind of been a staple of Patrick Graham's defense with the Giants, being able to bend but don't break and being able to get those key stops, especially when it comes to red zone football. But that didn't happen on Sunday, and so the Giants have got to kind of find their way back on the defensive side of the ball in terms of being able to slow opposing offenses down. Now, they do catch a break because Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to be out the next couple of months, enter Taylor Heinicke. So they should be in a position of strength being able to lean on that defense. But at the same time, they've got to find a way to be able to create some big plays to help their offense out when it comes to field position, being able to set them up for scoring opportunities, because we've seen that this offense struggles to do that under Daniel Jones.
And I think that's the most frustrating thing, is all the stuff that you just mentioned, those were last year's problems too. And we look at every season, hope springs eternal, and it's already got to be feeling like Groundhog's Day. Now, coming up next, let's take a look at the larger NFC East. And if week one told us anything about the power dynamic and changed any part about that, you can weigh in also. Be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Call us at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football's back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. Where do the Giants sit in the NFC East right now? We'll get to that and more next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Super Bowl champion Chris Canty. And if we're talking NFC East, we normally, Cliff, our producer, is like our representative for all things Philadelphia.
Well done, Chris.
But we are fired up right now to welcome in Kevin Negandhi, co-host of the 6 o'clock Sports Center here on ESPN and the ESPN College Football Podcast. He's in studio giving us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Kev, what's going on, man?
What's up, buddy? And well done, Cliff. Sorry, I was looking at Chris as Chris is on the show. And congrats to Chris joining you on this program. And shout out to Chinee. Things are good. And who would have thought that I would be even in this conversation? Because, listen, when you go into a season with no expectations and then you come out with a win in Atlanta, I know it's the Falcons, you feel really good about the way the season could be. And then you see what the Giants did and what Washington did. And so, listen, I'm not expecting this team to win the division. That is the Eagles. I just go in with the expectations that every single week they have a chance. We could see growth there with Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni. The schedule's brutal for the next 5 weeks. So I'm realistic here. I just get to enjoy at least 1 week of saying, hey, the only team in the division that won and is in first place.
I'm sure you felt a lot better coming off of that Falcons win than you did coming out of Nick Sirianni's introductory press conference, Kevin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Chris, to your point, like the entire city of Philadelphia was like, what did we just do? What is going on? And that was the vibe. But here's the difference, though. We're not in that day-in, day-out locker room that you guys understand, right? And I chalk that up to social anxiety, the idea of it's his first experience, it's in Philadelphia, you want to hit a home run. There was some awkwardness. He's an awkward guy. There's a thing that's going around that he's like the Italian Ted Lasso, right? and I can buy into that, right? I can totally buy into this concept of the feel-good type of person. But some of the things he did on Sunday, he game planned to the talent on the field. And there was some concept football that we hadn't seen in the last couple of years. And that's the thing that really stood out. And I think Orlovsky did a really good breakdown yesterday on NFL Live, too, by saying some of the concepts were the Oklahoma offense.
Yep.
Hey, let's cater to your quarterback. What a concept. And we didn't see that last year. And it was refreshing to see with Sirianni. And then afterwards, that team will play for him. And I'm all about that. You can't quantify what a locker room feels for a coach and what they're going to do. And you guys understand that day in and day out for what you guys did.
Yeah, and Kev, I think you're right, especially we've seen this trend so much with coaches in the NFL finally meeting, especially their quarterbacks, meeting them halfway on a lot of this stuff. I said Nick Sirianni did for Jalen Hurts what the Patriots did for Mac Jones. Mm-hmm. They said, we're going to make life as easy on you as possible. We have got the line of scrimmage shored up and healthy again. That Eagles front looked phenomenal. Again, factoring in that it was the Falcons here, but for Jalen, what's your viewpoint been on this? Is this a one-year trial one run for him?
It should be, but it should be like a legit one-year trial. Don't jerk him around. I view things very much like in quarters the way John Gruden has in the NFL. Let's go quarter by quarter, all right? That first four games, the second four games, but you got to give him a legitimate chance. The one thing you see with Jalen Hurts is he knows the offense, he's comfortable, and he's not going to take a risk. He's like Nick Saban on the field. He's a coach on the field. And you brought up the idea of a coach adjusting to the player. When I was watching the way the game was played out, I immediately thought of the Shanahans and RG3's first year. Let's cater to the quarterback. Mm. Let's bring some Baylor concepts and look how natural it was for him. And it worked out really well in that first year with Washington. And that's the vibe. And I hope that that's the process here for Jalen Hurts because he deserves a chance. He's one of those guys, no matter who he is and where he goes, people gravitate to him. He can't throw the deep ball as well as many other guys, but he's not going to try to win games with his arm. He's going to win games with his mind. And that little threat that you could run really breaks down a defense, and that hesitation, it helps him out with the weapons on the outside.
Kevin, you talked about Jalen Hurts beating people with his arm. He sure looked good throwing the ball to Devontae Smith on that fade route against the Falcons. I mean, that was the thing that probably impressed me the most about him. I mean, you know the movement skills, but just his command with the passing offense and being able to make smart decisions. I think that's something that bodes well for the Eagles as this season continues to unfold. But taking it to a big picture view of the NFC East, I know it's only after week one. Everybody has the tendency to overreact. Where is this Eagles team in the landscape of the division? Because Mike and I were speculating and saying that they could be the second best team in this division behind the Dallas Cowboys. How do you see it?
Chris, this is how I saw it at the start of the season. I wouldn't have been surprised if they won 6 games or 9 games. Anywhere in between there, and it all depends on the health of the two strengths of this team, the offensive line and the defensive line, because that's how this team is built. And we saw that in the last couple of years. When that offensive line is nicked up, you just hope and pray for the quarterback, regardless. I mean, Carson held on to the ball a lot, Carson Wentz last year, and he got crushed for it. But that line was beat up. And then you saw this whole week long, that buildup. Kelsey's healthy. Lane Johnson's healthy. Mulata's playing really well. And then you start to feel, okay, maybe they got a shot. If that line stays healthy, I think this is a 9-win team. They don't have a lot of depth there on the front line. So, again, you could use that, Chris, in every scenario in the NFL if you could stay healthy. But specifically for the Eagles, it's that offensive line that's going to dictate how successful they will be. And I think that when you look at the way the system is set up and you look at the way the division is, I think they could win 9 games potentially if that line remains the same. The Cowboys, listen, the Cowboys, I think, on offense are the creme de la creme. Can the Cowboys stop anybody? I'm not sure yet. We will find out.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, talking to Kevin DeGondi, host of the 6 o'clock Sports Center, and one of the hosts of the ESPN College Football Podcast. Do a great job there, you, Herbie, Pollock, and a whole host of others on that. But I wanted to bounce this off you because this week has been dominated by the conversations around Southern California. They fire Clay Helton after an abysmal loss against Stanford in the Coliseum. As you look at this now, we've seen a bunch of names floated out already. We know this is going to take time, and they will not be using a search firm for this one. So USC's got this in their own hands. Is there a name that's jumped out as you, one that you think could actually step up and put this program not only where this school needs it to be, but where the Pac-12 and now the Alliance need it to be going forward?
One guy, first off, Dante Williams is there because he is a phenomenal recruiter, and he has a fantastic recruiting class coming in. That is dog Clay Helton in the past, especially when you look at the talent around the country at Clemson, Ohio State at the quarterback position.
A lot of Cali boys.
Exactly.
A lot of Cali boys.
So Dante Williams is key that they have to make sure they keep him there. James Franklin can recruit anybody, anywhere, at any time. And he's the Penn State head coach, and he handled that question yesterday. But you notice he did not dismiss the question. And that's the one guy I would immediately circle. I also have a tendency to say, let's look at the Alabama car wash here of coaches, right? And who are the guys that have gone through and kind of become an analyst and then come up the ranks that have had to remodel their resume? And Bill O'Brien's right there. And he's the offensive coordinator, and that's the one guy where you're like, well, he had success at Penn State, and he had success as a coach in Houston in the NFL, not as a guy that was a player personnel type of person as a GM.
Important distinction.
So that's another guy. But I think the Mario Cristobals are fascinating. I think specifically if you look at, you know, fit, I'm not sure. Some of the fit in the Midwest guys, I mean, shoot your shot with Lincoln Riley because what do you got to lose, right?
Yeah.
Why not? I think James Franklin is the one immediate connection where I'm like, I could see that happening, and I could see it happening down the road. The big question is if Penn State wins and then Penn State continues and then they're in the playoff conversation, that changes a lot of things when you have to recruit for somebody for the early deadline in December when it comes to the signing period.
We talked to Bomani Jones yesterday, and he said really the only resume point you need if you are Coach Franklin is I won at Vanderbilt and then drop the mic and wait and see how much money they want to send your way. So,
yep.
Everyone, you guys can check out Kevin DeGondi, as you well know. I'm not, you know, informing anyone. The 6 o'clock Sports Center, pretty big deal around here. Kevin DeGondi, L. Duncan, going to be on your TVs in just a little bit. Kev, we appreciate you, buddy.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Awesome stuff checking in with Kevin DeGondi. Coming up next, though, 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. How dire are things already for the New York Giants heading into tomorrow night? and one player out this upcoming weekend, shifting the balance of power already in the AFC, next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. It's Thursday night already. Not must win, but as Chris Canty here on Canty and Golic Jr. phrased it, a can't-lose game for the New York Giants 2 weeks into the season. We're going to get to that and answer the question ourselves here as we look at the rest of the NFC East in this picture. But first, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. We were just talking with Kevin Negandhi about some of the stuff going on in college football, USC's head coaching vacancy. So let's go to Kevin in Texas. Kevin, you're on Canty and Golic Jr., man. What do you got?
Hey, guys, how are y'all?
Doing well.
Good. Hey, a couple of names. What about Tom Herman and someone that's been coaching high school about 30 minutes from my house, Art Briles?
We appreciate the call. I would say this. For Tom,
Deshaun is going to come off of Tom Herman a little bit after what happened in Texas.
Hell no.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any chance on that one. And then with Art Briles, I saw Bomani Jones this out on Twitter not too long ago. Go look at what USC recently had to pay out a massive settlement for as far as a scandal on their campus. There is no way they are going to touch Art Briles with 30-foot pole. You've seen college football largely ignore Art Briles. I think there might be one job out there that would take him under the right circumstances, but Chris, I couldn't see it. No way, no how.
No, he's radioactive, and USC wants somebody to kind of restore the luster to the program. I mean, that program is a shell of what it used to be, and quite frankly, the success that Clay Helton has had during his tenure, he was winning with Lane Kiffin and with Steve Sarkisian's guys. So, I mean, when you start talking about, you know, being able to recruit and being able to keep homegrown talent in California, I think you have to go out there and get a name that has a lot more cachet than Art Briles or Tom Herman. So this is going to be a national search. It's going to be exhaustive. They're going to have tentacles reaching to the NFL. There are going to be a lot of names that pop out of this, but the candidate that they land on, they've got to make sure can win some of those recruiting battles that they've got to fight to be able to retain some of their in-state talent, because the recruiting wars have kind of been hustling backwards for USC. I mean, if you look at what they did the last couple of years, it hasn't been great. You know what I'm saying? Like, the 2019 class was 20th, and then the 2020 class was 64th. So that's going backwards. They need somebody that's able to spin it forward and being able to keep all of that talent they got in California, keep some of those guys home.
As Kevin Negandhi pointed out, that's why Dante Williams is the interim head coach right now. That guy's an ace recruiter trying to keep that class together. So we'll get to more of your calls, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, on the Giants game coming up tomorrow night and on college football if you are so inclined. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. But Chris, looking at the NFC East, we were just talking about that with Kevin Negandhi here in the studio. And for the Cowboys, it gets interesting because we know the Giants have a division game coming up tomorrow night against the Washington football team. But when you look at the Cowboys, tough one coming up this weekend. You got the Chargers there. I mean, there's a realistic chance they could start this season 0-2. Would that deter you at all when it comes to predicting them to still be the ones to win this division?
Not even a little bit, Mike, because if you look at their rest of their schedule early on in the season, they don't play a team that had a winning record last year until week 11 against the Chiefs. So, I mean, the Dallas Cowboys have plenty of opportunities to be able to stack wins early on this season. I think for them, it's more about being able to find an identity on the defensive side of the ball. We saw them with all the takeaways against the Buccaneers. And then on offense, being able to shore up that offensive line now that Lyle Collins is potentially going to miss the next five games. So I think those are the two areas of concern. But after seeing the level that Dak Prescott played at and knowing that he by far and away is the best quarterback in that division, I have no doubts that the Dallas Cowboys are going to be in the driver's seat for the NFC East crown for the rest of this season. I have no question about that in my mind. The only question that I have about the division is how is number two and number three going to fall? Because as Kev just mentioned when he was on the show with us, like, the Philadelphia Eagles have the potential to be an 8 or 9 win team, and that could be good enough to have them second in this division and knocking on the doorstep at the playoffs. And watching that offensive line and that defensive line go to work against the Falcons, it's hard for me not to buy into this team just because I believe that's how football games are won and lost in the National Football League, in the trenches, and the Eagles have shown that those units are going to be strong for their team this season.
Yeah, again, a lot of this stuff is on brand with what we know and trust, right? The Eagles' O and D lines have been good. The last year, they were just injured a whole lot in all of this one. Dallas, that offense was great in the four games Dak was on the field last year, and they proved it again. Like, I'm with you. You look, Dallas's offense is the most special unit in this division. It is just narrowly closing out the Washington football team's defense, but what we saw from night one was a continuation of last year. So Dallas is locked in at one because they're special. Philly, like you said, built solid on both sides. Washington's got the other special unit. It's just the quarterback situation now. We got Taylor Heineke getting ready to take snaps. And the Giants, I just can't point to one thing that they do at an elite level right now. One part of their game that's better than everyone else.
No, I don't see it either, Mike. And I'm at the point now with the Giants where we might be starting to break glass in case of emergency. We might have to start ringing the alarm when it comes to the New York Giants just because of the flaws of this football team after a concerted effort to try to get some of the things cleaned up that were issues last year. They still haven't been able to get them fixed. Yeah, Andrew Thomas played better in his regular season debut this year than he did at any point last year, but that's about the only guy on the offensive line that improved, which has to be a concern for Dave Gettleman and for Joe Judge. And then your quarterback, he's been supposed to be working on being able to protect the football throughout training camp, throughout the offseason, and at the most inopportune time in the second half of that game against the Broncos, he turns the ball over, and then Denver's able to go out and get points on that very next possession and make it a 2-touchdown lead. So I look at some of the things that have been fatal flaws for this Giants team in the last couple of years, and those things haven't gotten fixed. And on top of that, it feels like the defense has regressed a little bit from where they were a year ago. So I'm still concerned about it. They've got a lot of things they've got to get cleaned up. Defensively, I'm also worried about who they have coming off the edge to rush the passer. If you can't rush the passer in this league, you're going to have a hard time being able to slow down offenses. So the Giants got a lot of things that they got to get fixed and not a whole lot of time to do it because, again, they got the quick turnaround against the Washington football team, a group that's going to be angry because they lost one to the Chargers at home in week one.
888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. We'll take some of your calls coming up next on the Giants, on college football, and coming up next, why one marquee wide receiver's absence from an AFC contender may actually be a good thing as the season goes along. We'll get to that next after this word from Indeed. Now, running your own business, it requires a lot of running around. From bookkeeping to client meetings, you run it all. By the time you need to hire, you've run out of energy. Luckily, with Indeed Instant Match, you immediately receive a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description the moment you sponsor a job. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all the other job sites combined. Hiring can finally run smoothly with Indeed. To learn more, visit Indeed.com/credit. OBJ out. But is it a death blow for the Cleveland Browns? Next on ESPN Radio. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. I want to get to a tweet from Adam Schefter. Some news coming up this weekend in the NFL. Adam Schefter, by the way, who will join us at 5:30 Eastern on Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. I also want to get to your calls, 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. But before I do that, Chris Canty, we mentioned that Rolling Stone put out a list of the top 500 songs of all times. And there's a lot of triggers in here because this is an internet list. And we're supposed to get mad about this. And so I'm going to read you a couple here. I want you to tell me if these are overrated, underrated, or properly rated. All right? You
ready? Okay, let's go.
We're going to start at the back end of this one. At 491, Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle. Over, under, or properly rated?
Oh, that's underrated. You know that's underrated, man. I mean, that's another one of those songs coming out of the tunnel in the stadium, how could you not be fired up when that song is playing? So absolutely underrated on this list.
Yeah, I think it's an abomination. It is one of the stadium anthems of the all-time there. What about this one, Chris? This is going to be a little bit tougher. 303, No Scrubs by TLC.
Not my favorite song from TLC, but when you start talking about appeal to the masses, I could see it being right in that 300 territory. So I'm going to say properly rated.
I'd probably agree with you on that one. My heart says underrated just because that's an all-time scream it in your car anthem, but you know what? I'm going to let this ride. I'm going to side with you.
Not
on
if
this
you're
one.
In the passenger side, though, Mike. Not if you're in the passenger side, bro.
It's a fair point. It's a fair
not
point.
Not at all.
You got to be aware of where you are sitting when No Scrubs comes on here. So we'll get to plenty more of those at Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Canty 99 on Twitter. But let's get to the Goodyear hotline, 888-729-3776, and go to Brandon in Maine. Brandon, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. What do you got to say about Southern Cal's head coaching vacancy?
First coaching name that came to mind when you were talking about it was Bill O'Brien. Got some NFL experience, plenty of college experience, but obviously at Penn State. Might be a good rebound for good old Billy O over at USC. What do you think?
I mean, I could see it. Again, he's, you know, come out of the Nick Saban, you know, rehabilitation image program over there at Alabama, you know, or he will after this season. He's not even all the way through it. And Chris, that is just a testament to the Midas touch of Nick Saban, that you don't even have to have been a coach on the field yet, and people are automatically going to assume he's got you right.
No, it's incredible what Nick Saban has been able to do with that machine down there in Alabama. But again, it's one of those things with Bill O'Brien. We know he can coach football. We've seen him do it at the collegiate level to have success. We've seen him do it at the NFL level and have success. A couple of years ago, his Houston Texans had the Kansas City Chiefs on the ropes, and the Chiefs ended up being able to pull out that epic comeback after that that fake punt debacle that the Texans had. And the rest is history in terms of his tenure down there with the Texans. But in terms of him being a good coach and in terms of him being a name that still has a little bit of cachet, I could see something like that being able to work out. But it also has to – you know, you also have to consider whether or not Bill O'Brien resonates with the alumni and also with the recruiting base that you're going to be drawn from in California. Those are two questions I don't have the answer to.
888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. We'll get to more calls in a little bit here. It's Canty and Golic Jr., Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty on ESPN Radio. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. And Chris, one of the tweets I mentioned from ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter that went out today involved Odell Beckham Jr., the Browns wide receiver. Adam tweeted that the Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski said today OBJ will not play Sunday versus Houston. How big an effect is this for the Browns right now? We saw him roll for three quarters of the game in week one, not getting this weapon back. Is this time to sound alarms yet 2 weeks in?
Mike, do you see who's on the schedule for them in week two? I'm not worried about them up against the Houston Texans at all. The Cleveland Browns will be fine. I mean, their offense is still geared around that offensive line and that running game, so I don't think they'll have any problem taking care of the Texans. I'm still not buying into Houston, even though it was impressive to see them take care of their business against the Jags in week one. I still think from a talent standpoint, there's a huge gap. I mean, it's like a Grand Canyon type of chasm between where the Browns are at from a talent standpoint and Houston. So I look at this as one of those things. OBJ would be a nice to have, but it's not a gotta have going up against this opponent. I still think this offense is predicated around being able to run the football and then being able to take shots downfield in play action. They showed in that game against Kansas City, they have more than enough weaponry to get that done. I think where Odell comes into play is when the Browns get into gotta have it straight drop back situations, end of half, end of game, being able to provide that prolific threat on the outside for Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, the rest of that stuff sets the floor, and he can be part of the ceiling. Like, I really hope we don't get back into that place where we start talking about, well, is the offense better without Odell Beckham Jr. like we did last
Come
year?
Come on, man.
Like, it was bad news. But you know what I do want to say is I think what we learned over the course of last year and into this year is we probably underrated what Jarvis Landry was capable of, right? When he was down in Miami, we just viewed him as a guy that was going to catch everything 5 yards and in. I think he used the absence of Odell to show how dynamic he can be in that downfield passing game. And I saw Pat McAfee say this. This could work out better if you get a healthy Odell in the middle of the season, putting all of this behind as opposed to having to throw him back out there a little bit too early for a guy who has been nicked up along the way with soft tissue stuff.
No, it makes sense to me. I mean, if you be able to form an identity in the passing game, if you get Jarvis Landry going, if they can get the Schwartz kid to ever catch the football because he can flat out fly, that would be a big value add. David Njoku and others just kind of being able to get a feel for what that passing game looks like, what it would be without the concept and utilizing play action. I think that's when you start to wonder, okay, throw in Odell Beckham Jr. as the crab cake next to the filet, and you'll see what you got there. I think this is a situation, though, where the Browns are going to be able to buy themselves time just because of how talented they are. They're not going to miss Odell Beckham Jr. in the short term. The thing you need to worry about is the evolution of the downfield passing game, straight drop back later on in the season.
Lots to build on for the Cleveland Browns heading into this upcoming season. But coming up next, let's get in the gutter right now. One of the most toxic locker rooms from the offseason had an outside voice that felt like stirring the pot this morning. Next.